Coming up on the Daily Detour, stuntman John Davis helps you face your fears.
This is the moment you have the moment to choose. You get to choose whether you're going to think positively or think negatively.
Hey, hey, hey! I want to march my life away. Dance like I'm insane. Don't give a damn what they say.
The Daily Detour.
Welcome in, I'm Dan Roberts. Corporate action hero John Davis is my guest today, and he's going to help us face our fears. He's even got a free gift for you, and it really is free. He doesn't even need an email address, and I'll tell you how to get that a little bit later in the episode. I did recently face my fears again. I've only done stand-up comedy on open mic nights, and there's a reason for that, and I've only done it, like, I don't even know. Like, you could count it on two hands anyway, so not very many. And haven't done it since the pandemic began. So I was understandably nervous when I decided to return to the comedy stage. But doggone it, I faced that fear. And I'll tell you how that went after my interview with corporate action hero John Davis. John Davis is an internationally known keynote speaker, comedian, comedy sword fighter, fight director, stuntman, college professor, artistic director, action hero, overachiever, it sounds like. He's traveled extensively throughout the world, speaking to audiences of all ages and backgrounds in 28 countries and over 4,000 live performances under his belt there. And he is going to help you, I think, with your whole life. I think with your relationships. I think with your career, because he is going to tackle fear. Fear. Wheelhouse, right, John Davis?
It absolutely is my wheelhouse. It's the starting point of all achievement, is getting over that fear.
Not easy to do. I can't wait to hear what you have to say. I know a little bit. I dug in a little bit in my research, but we'll see. And then another thing that you'll want to know about John is that, well, you suffered a serious back injury kind of like in your early 20s. So before you'd really gotten anything going for yourself. I mean, you were like in the planning and let's go for it stage of life.
Oh yeah, I had already started working towards my big dream goal of being a stuntman and a fight director and what's known as a special ability actor, someone who can go in and do sword fights and things of that nature. And I was working hard and I was buff and I was going for my black belt in martial arts and I was doing a lot of different things. And I ended up helping a friend of mine unload boxes of clay from his van. He was a professional potter, and I was helping him unload these 80-pound boxes of clay. And I picked up one, and I turned, and when I twisted, it literally unscrewed the top of my spine from my lower spine. I collapsed, and they rushed me to the hospital paralyzed. And the doctor said, you have a condition known as spina bifida occulta, to which I promptly said, okay. Gesundheit. He said, your dream of being a stuntman and a fight director are done. Your career is over. You need to start thinking about a sedentary career. I was 22 at the time. So I went down a very deep road of this was the big goals that I had set for myself. And he was telling me that I need to give up on it. And while I was lying in the hospital bed, someone gave me a book called The Tao of Jeet Kune Do by Bruce Lee, still the number one selling martial arts book on earth. And he handed me that book and I started reading it. And as I read it, I found this whole philosophy about mental flexibility. And over the course of the next year and a half, I worked my way back out of that bed. And at a year and a half, I jumped off a 3-story tower into a giant fall pad.
That's incredible. We need to back up a little bit here because there's a lot that you just covered in a short amount of time. First of all, I've heard of spina bifida, but not the part with you said occulta?
Occulta, O-C-C-O-U-L-T-A. When you look at the spine, when the vertebrae form, they come around and they create these donuts with these two flanges that fuse. Three of mine right above my pelvis, when they came around to fuse, they missed. And so I had these wonky shaped discs that when I twisted, literally unscrewed themselves and dropped off, pinching off my spinal column. And they didn't know whether I would ever walk again at that point because they didn't know how much damage the spinal cord itself had taken in the impact. But I worked my way back.
That's amazing. I mean, it's truly some kind of miracle, it sounds like. But that's a really freak accident. Like that was just the right circumstance. I've never heard of anybody twisting and cutting themselves in two, basically, like that. So it was really this unknown ailment that you were born with. Or condition. Yeah,
I'd never heard of that either.
Yeah. No, it's
yeah, and I had no idea. My parents had no idea. We had no idea that it was a from birth defect in my spine. Had no clue. Doctors wanted to put pins in my spine and support it so that it could go through the rest of my life. Right. But I knew that if they did that, I would never be a stuntman or a fight director, because once you fuse the back, you've created a space where injury can happen, because without the flexibility there, you can't do falls, you can't do rolls.
Right.
And I chose not to go for the pins.
So while you were injured, you read this book by Bruce Lee. Is that correct?
That is correct. And what's interesting about that book is Bruce Lee wrote that book when Bruce Lee was in the hospital in traction, unable to actually do martial arts. And he was just told, give up on your physical career. He had the same exact experience I had had. And he ended up writing this book because it was the one thing he could still do towards his goal while he was in traction.
Was that a book that you'd already had in your collection? Did someone pass it along to you because of your situation? Like, how did you get turned on to that book?
My Taekwondo instructor gave it to me at that point. He gave it to me while I was lying in the bed. But the book, when you read the book, it's interesting because it's his philosophy on martial arts. But Bruce Lee was a very, very keen guy, because everything he did, he made sure he put his philosophy into. And so his concepts of being like water, when obstacles come up in your life, you're focused on your goal and realizing whatever comes up in between you and your goal is just something you have to be flexible with and work with. And so that to me was a huge factor for getting out of that bed.
So how long did that process take? And the doctors are saying they're telling you don't expect much.
Right. It was 30 days before I could sit up. And literally, that was like, today I'm moving my toes.
Right.
Tomorrow I'm flexing my ankle, you know. That was kind of working my way back from that. And then it was a year, and I was back to where I would call myself a normal individual before I started working out to become a stuntman.
Right.
And then a year and 6 months is when I did the jump. And that was a very triumphant day.
Absolutely. And did you call your doctors and let them know what you were up to?
No. No. I have seen them since and have shared with them what I've done since, and they're just blown away that I was able to do it.
Yeah.
But I found out a long time ago, you know, if I'm living what somebody else tells me what I can or can't do, I'm living their life and not my own.
Right.
So I get to choose what I get to do. The heck with
them. Absolutely. Fear being one of those, you know, you could consider fear a character, a person that would be that person.
Right. And fear is, you know, given by those people who will tell you you can't, because they're looking at data and they're telling you this is what's happening with you. And
right.
The interesting thing is, I truly believe we're the creator of our experience. And so in my life, they could tell me whatever they want to tell me, but I'm going to create what I want to create. And so when I took that power back into myself, I was able to do things that people had never experienced. And because of that, you talked about being an overachiever. I have always done whatever I wanted to set my mind to. And so I would set those goals and I would just go do them, because at that point I knew I could. Because what I had already been through was much harder than anything else in my life.
Right. So in a weird way, it might have powered you further, faster.
It was the greatest blessing in my life to have my spine split in two.
So there's something you don't hear every day.
So everyone should jump out there and try that.
Learn how in John's book. No.
Screw your back for life.
Yeah. John actually does have a gift for you, which we'll tell you about a little bit later. But before we get into all the good stuff about how to combat fear, I do want to know briefly about, maybe not so briefly, I don't know, about your theme park experiences, and which parks were you at? I'm kind of a theme park nerd.
Well, I did not do any of the big names. I did a lot of regional parks, and I also did a lot of directing of Renaissance festivals as well.
Okay.
I didn't do any of the big parks. My background in theme park work is in characters and creating characters, acting. And so I would come in as the artistic director. I would create the street programs in parks, theme parks specifically, so I'd have theme actors. I also did a lot of work with the concepts of how the commercials ran. Like I wrote most of the commercials for a lot of the parks I worked at.
Wow.
Because I wanted to have the theme experience in the commercials.
Yeah.
And so I did a lot of radio, a lot of TV, and creating those commercials. In fact, I did a lot of the strange voices you heard in the commercials of some of the parks. parks I did. But most of the regional parks were just, they were just regional small parks. But the majority of the artistic direction stuff I did was at Renaissance festivals. I did the Florida Renaissance Festival, the Tennessee Renaissance Festival, the Great Lakes Medieval Fair, you know, many of them around the country.
Do you like going to theme parks, or are you just
not
like
anymore.
Being in the...
Not anymore. Yeah. I don't like going to Renaissance festivals either. It's like work.
Say no more. And then you also have done some USO shows.
I was blessed. I put together a comedy sword fighting show called Hack and Slash, and I did that all over the world. And I was on stage on September 8th, 2001. September 8th, catch that now, 2001. Yeah. And two guys walked up to us from the Pentagon and said, hey, we've been watching your show for years. Would you be interested in doing USO shows? I said, yeah, we'd love to. So on Monday, September 10th, we dropped our packet off at their office. Tuesday was September 11th. They shut down all their offices for the next 3 weeks. And then after the third week, they called us up and they said, can you go immediately? And we flew out in November and we flew all over, see, that first tour was Iceland, England, Norway, Germany, Belgium, and Holland. Wow. And we did 42 days. And then we slowly kept pushing them, telling them to not send us to Europe, send us where they really need us. And by our third tour, we were literally Fallujah, Ramadi, Mosul, you know, Jalalabad. We were on the front lines and had some real crazy experiences. But most importantly, we brought a pressure release valve to people who really needed it.
Absolutely.
They really needed to laugh.
I've heard that people, and obviously you go into that with a certain amount of patriotism or goodwill or whatever you want to call it. But I've heard coming back, you come back changed yourself because of the experience and the people that you talk to, the soldiers.
I had a soldier walk up to me after a show in Ramadi who said, Mr. Davis, this morning I was in a firefight, and this afternoon for 2 hours, you allowed me to forget all about that. Thank you for coming. You know, seeing that kind of gratitude every day from the soldiers was amazing.
Yeah.
And then we had the experience where, I don't know if you remember this, early on in the Iraq war, there was a town called Samarra, and Samarra, the Shia attacked the Sunni's mosque in Samarra. And the U.S. military has a base right outside of there. And we flew in the week after that happened, and we came in on two helicopters. It was me and three other comedians, and they had all of our equipment. Now, the show that we brought was like a comedy circus kind of event. We did sword fights and whips and nunchucks and juggling and ladder walking and beds of nails with breaking cinder blocks on people. And
sounds awesome.
It was awesome. It was awesome, right? So all of our equipment was in one Black Hawk helicopter, and we were in the other helicopter, and they brought us in. And they dropped us off, and the base didn't have a dining facility. So to eat, you would go to a truck and get your food and scatter, because they didn't want people to congregate in an area and become a target, because it was a very forward operating base. So we found a Humvee, and we climbed up in our Humvee, and we ate lunch, and it was great. Finished lunch, we went and they did our show for 2 hours. And came back, and the helicopters came in and landed, because you don't leave the helicopters on the ground because they're targets. So they come in, they land, they throw our stuff in the front helicopter. We climb in the back helicopter. The two helicopters tilt to lift out of the base. The rocket-propelled grenade flies under the helicopter I'm sitting in and blows up the Humvee I had lunch in.
Oh, my God.
Right. And so you come out of there very changed. Still to this day, I hear noises and I look around, you know. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so that's right in the heart of fear. So what do we do? How do we get started here? How do we just say, I'm not going to listen to you, fear?
Well, it's interesting. There's two elements you have to think about. The first is, what is fear? Okay. Most people, when they think of fear, you ask them, what is fear? They can't come up with an answer, or they come up with the pat answer of false evidence appearing real. You know, that's not what fear is scientifically, though. When you break it down, fear is an emotional reaction to some future event that may or may not happen, with your focus on it being a negative outcome. It literally is just negatively focused uncertainty. And so that's the first thing you have to realize, is that it's just an emotional reaction to nothing, right? It's you thinking ahead. The second thing is, we have a natural primal fight or flight response that we all have that causes us to hold in air. And when I say hold in air, whenever you see somebody who has a fear response, the first thing they do is they go, they gasp for air. And then they feel like they can't breathe the whole time they're afraid. And the reason they're feeling like they can't breathe is not because they don't have air. It's because their body's holding that air in so that they can run further and faster. It's a natural primal response. So just like actors on stage or actors in Hollywood are trained that when they forget their lines, they're literally trained to exhale and relax all their muscles, and it shuts off that response and opens the brain back up and lets the lines come back.
Interesting.
And so when you're in any kind of fear response, whenever you're feeling that tenseness in your chest, exhale, right? And then when I was on the front lines, I was talking to those soldiers and I asked them, after you set your fears down, how do you move forward? He says, well, it's easy for us to set our fears down because we have an objective. We have a goal, something to focus on. And that, you know, I have this process called the five F's, fearlessness being the first and focus being the second. They're the first two elements of letting go of fear is to realize that not only is it something that you can release just in your simple breath, but it's by focusing on something different than the negative outcome, you're now going to break that fear cycle.
It seems like we are hardwired to experience that fear. It's more difficult for us to imagine future success, it seems like.
That's a great way of putting it, because a lot of times we sit in our present moment because the future is uncertain. You know, people fear death because they don't know whether they're going to hell, right? Whether it's a good experience or a bad experience.
Or right? Whatever comes next. Yeah, we don't still right. know what comes next. Yeah.
It's the uncertainty, right? So you can sit in this moment right now and you can go, I'm going to look up there. But this is the moment you have the moment to choose. You get to choose whether you're going to think positively or think negatively. The interesting thing is whatever you're thinking in your present moment, your subconscious mind's going to kick in and help you see it. So if you're actively being negative, your subconscious mind's going to show you negative things around you. And you've got to break that cycle if you want to move into something better.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's what I always say is, like, if you don't think you can do it, you're right. Because you've already...
Henry Ford said, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a good company, I guess.
His exact quote was, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
Yeah. It's kind of up to you. You know, you're not going to have everything may not work out like it did on paper, but you're going to have some sort of success if you move towards that outcome, you know, and it might be better than what you had on paper.
Here's the toughest part that I see with people who are trying to go to something better in their life is they're looking at this giant goal and it seems so daunting and out there and they think they have to struggle to get to it. But that's not the way the brain works. The brain doesn't do that because you only actively live in one present moment. I mean, you can't go to the store next Thursday right now, and you can't go to the store last Thursday right now.
Yeah.
You can only go right now, only do your thought, word, deed in this present moment. What's going to bring that success to you is making small, successful present moments that are in alignment with that goal. And it's going to come to you and be realized in your present moment. So realize it's what you do here and now that gets you that.
And safety, you know, the safety, if you will, of my parents' jobs, that doesn't exist nowadays, the pensions and all of this stuff. So you should just go for whatever it is that you're, you know, get over your fears and do what you want to do, because you can only control yourself. You can't control the company you're working for. You can't control any other social and economic climate. You can only control yourself.
And the interesting thing is, when I stopped living what my parents wanted me to be and started doing the things that I wanted to do, first of all, I was happier. Second of all, I was more monetarily prosperous. I made a lot more money doing the things I loved doing. And now I've been to 30 countries. I've been inside the pyramids of Giza. I've been top of Machu Picchu. I have been all over the world doing amazing and cool things. I worked with Brad Pitt and David Duchovny. I've done all this stuff, right? None of it would have happened if I didn't set goals and go, okay, I'm now going to act upon what I'm doing right here and now. If I don't act right here and right now, I don't get anything.
Tell us more about your book.
It's the 5F's workbook, basically what it is. What it is, is it takes you through the process of breaking past your fear, helps you identify the goals you're going for. The process is fearlessly focused with faith, follow through with flexibility. It takes you through the process of achieving more in your present moment and breaking past the fear and into achievement.
And did you come up with this? Did you identify your own fears? I mean, were you facing these fears and they were blocking you? And then you decided, oh, I get it. If I do this, I can move forward.
Well, I'll tell you what, lying in that hospital bed, I was inundated with fears. And there was a couple of things that I had to realize. The first of all, I had to realize that suddenly I had a community around me who was helping me through my process. We're not in it alone. There are people who will help you. No matter, you know, they might not be your direct family or they might be your direct family. It might be your best friend from childhood may show up to help you. It may be some complete stranger who takes a liking to you or something. But we're not in anything alone. I often tell my audiences when I'm speaking, I say, somebody in this room is smarter than you, But when I said that, somebody in this room just thought of you, because nobody has all the answers. We all have our individual parts, and right. it's a sum total is how we move forward. So that's a big key element. Now, being in that hospital bed, I learned flexibility, which is the last of the five F's. Through my process of working with the soldiers and stunt people from Hollywood, I began to see how they were hacking their fight or flight response and how they were able to move forward. And over the course of time, I realized these five F's were prevalent in both of their lives. You know, they had to set their fears aside. They had to get focused on a goal. They had to believe they could achieve it with their faith. You know, so fearlessly focused with faith. Then they had to take an action, which means they had to follow through. And then the lastly, of course, when something came up that seemed contrary, they had to stay flexible and keep their eye on the goal and keep moving forward. And so by going through the process that I went through and then seeing other people go through the same kind of process in different parts of life, right. in different careers and things, I was able to decipher it and break it down.
More with corporate action hero and stuntman John Davis coming up. He's got some fun stories from Hollyweird for us. Tinseltown. Do people still say Tinseltown? I don't know. Anyway, Brad Pitt, David Duchovny, and Harrison Ford figuring into the stories ahead. Before we get there, though, I'm going to face my fears once again, tell you about something I've created. And when you create something and you don't keep it to yourself, you put it out there to the world, that's a vulnerable thing. So you are facing some fears there. And I'll tell you the deal. I'm in the middle of writing a book, not an exciting thriller or anything like that. It's kind of a textbook, I guess. But in prepping for that, I thought I'd dip my toes into the whole self-publishing thing with Amazon, the KDP. And so I put together a couple of notebooks. And it's also a way for me to play with my artwork and do a little packaging, a little design. And so I've created these notebooks with a character I created called Nina Noir, or Noir, if you prefer. And the first one is the Action Planner Notebook. It's your all-in-one to-do list. Keep track of chores, meals, appointments, workouts, stuff like that. And you don't owe me anything. You don't have to buy one of these. I'm letting you know that they're there and you might find them helpful. So buy one if you like. If you're leading a double life, buy two. And, you know, speaking of the corporate action hero, if you are an action hero or assassin or spy, the Action Planner Notebook is compatible with Invisible Ink. Not included, though. I don't think. I mean, it's invisible, so I don't know. Maybe it is included. Feel around. Open the package and feel around. Maybe there's an invisible pen in that box. The other one that I created is a passwords notebook, and this was really solving a problem for me. This is a solution for myself. I'm constantly getting prompted for passwords, and it drives me crazy because even though I think I've got them down, the next thing you know, I'm on the verge of getting locked out of another account because apparently I can't remember a password to save my life. So I'd make a lousy spy in that regard. So if you've got the same problem, you know, here's a book for you. You know, it's a nice little book. It's got a glossy cover with my character on it and looks nicer than a string of post-it notes. And you can't remember what's what on the post-it notes anyway. So there you go. Maybe the notebook is the answer to your problems. I'm definitely using one myself as far as the passwords book goes. And also, and by the way, if you are a spy, you can also use it to store someone else's username and passwords. You can break into their office or home and jot that stuff down in the book and leave. Not encouraging you to do that, but if you're a spy, you're already doing that. So I don't need to tell you. It's the Action Planner and Password Notebooks with Nina Noir and artwork by me. They're both under $10 each, so really affordable. Look for them on Amazon. There is a link in today's episode description if you're seriously interested in making a purchase. Also supports the podcast, so I appreciate it. Now for more with today's guest, John Davis. I love this interview. I love this chat. Very quotable and very actionable. If you're stuck, I encourage you to, you know, even listen to this a second time, take notes, download his free workbook, the link to that also in today's episode description. And I think he'll really help you. If you take his teachings to heart, I think there's some good stuff here. So let's get back to it. We're afraid of so many things, you know, from the time we're teenagers, well, even younger than that, but for some reason, you know, dating comes into my head, like, you know, asking a girl out or something, you know, how long do you stew over that before you finally do it? Because you're so afraid of being rejected. But once you're rejected, if that's what happens, it's over. You can move on. Like you lived to tell the story or keep it to yourself, but you're alive, you know.
Well, you know, they call me Triple X because I have three ex-wives. But the thing I want to say about that is the biggest lesson I learned in relationships in general was that you have to be you to have someone love you. You know, in my relationships, the reason I have three ex-wives is because we met, they liked me, we got together, and then they tried to change me to become something else other than what I, who and what I was. And, you know, you have to be malleable and work with someone, but you don't have to change who you are for them.
Right.
You need to be you to be fully you, because no one will love you unconditionally for you unless they love you.
It's one thing to be, you know, to live a life of service, if you will. It's one thing to do things for others, think of others. It's another thing to literally live for them at the expense of your own, you know, dreams or individuality.
And I can remember in each one of my marriages, I can remember moments where I literally had made the decision to stop going for my goals because it wasn't in alignment with what they wanted. And when I when I got past those relationships and the struggles in those relationships is when I went on to do all the stuff that I talk about. You know, I was married during some of it. Once I was past them, I did much more in my life afterwards.
So another thing, like I'll hear my parents' voices in my head, right? My parents are more risk averse. I have my own aversion to risk, but our definitions are different, right? They think I'm crazy. Like they think they can't, I can't believe you're going to do that or that you did this thing, you know? And to me, it's not, you know, there's much scarier things to me. So that's one example of negativity. Even though they're not trying to be negative, their own fear, they're projecting that onto you and they're trying to save you or what, I don't know. They just don't want to see you get hurt, but it kind of gets in your head and messes with you if you listen to it. There's also toxic people that just really go out of their way to make you feel bad or try to crush your dreams or whatever. So how do you address negative people?
Well, the first thing you need to do is realize that they are negative people. Sometimes we don't see it as negative. We look at them and we go, oh my gosh, we have to help them. Well, sometimes that help is just them being negative. And you have to realize that of who is being negative. As far as going back to your parents, you know, my parents, their parents were adults through the Depression. And so my parents were the kids after the Depression. So they had a huge lack mentality and fear of losing everything every minute of their lives. So they passed a lot of that down to the kids, right? So that right. lack mentality really changes, you know, and puts a lot of fear into you as well. I had to realize that when I was dealing with people who were negative, first of all, you have the opportunity to make that a positive. And I'll tell you what I mean. I one time had a waitress at a restaurant walk up to my table, and literally the first words out of her mouth were, "I'm having a bad day. I'm sorry. You're going to have bad service." So those were the first words out of her mouth. And the guy at the table with me was instantly pissed off. He was really angry, right?
That's such a weird thing to say to someone.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Right. I turned to her and I said, "I'm so sorry. Why don't you sit down and have lunch and I'll handle your tables?" And she was like, "What?" And then I started making jokes and laughing with her. And it's a hard day. Don't worry about it. I got it. I'll help you out. And I just expect a good tip when I'm done. Right? And she laughed. And what happened was over the course of lunch, she kept hanging out at our table because we made her feel better. Right? You can change people's perspective, but you cannot change their core belief.
Right.
Only they can do that. Only, you know, trust in anything, including trust in self, is developed by results over time. And so you have to make results and have them go over time for you to believe it. So if you believe you're not an achiever, take a small step and succeed at it. You know, even if it's a matter of, okay, I want to run a 5K. Well, take the first quarter mile walk.
Right.
You know, 100 feet walk if that's all you can do. But you've got to take those small steps and realize over the course of time that that trust will build and that self-power will grow within you.
Yeah. One thing, I don't know if this is, I mean, there is a fear. I've been writing a book lately and I don't know what the fear is exactly. Sometimes I think it's a fear of success, right? That's a thing as well as fear of failure. But the one thing that I've done differently at this point in my life that I never did before is I just get up every day and I write. Right. Like that's just it. Sometimes I don't even know what I'm going to write, you know, and it's kind of all over the place. But the fact that I just do it, I just get started, that's seems to make all the difference, you know. Now I have a ton of chapters completed. You know, so
when Sylvester Stallone wrote Rocky, I saw this in an interview. He said, you know, if you're going to write a play or write a book, he says, just get up and write. Realize the first edition of it is going to be crap.
Right.
He says, because it's going to get edited. It's going to be revamped. You're going to do things. But if you don't get it on paper, it'll never get done. So just write it. Just put it out there. And then realize it is ever moving. It's ever changing.
Yeah.
You know, and, until it's created, you know?
That's exactly right. Write it badly and then rewrite it.
Right. What I do when I write, I'm in the middle of writing a book right now as well called Be an Action Hero, Not a Reaction Zero. And I'm sending that off to an editor like every few weeks. And she's editing the new stuff I've written. And it comes back with a ton of changes.
Yeah.
You know, it's coming back with suggestions for this. I don't really understand this, you know.
Right.
If someone's telling you they don't understand something, a professional editor's telling you that, you better really pay attention because
right.
your goal is to let people understand it. And she's been amazing. Working with her has been one of the greatest things I've done, actually.
Yeah, one of my broadcasting teachers back in the day, you know, said if people aren't understanding you, it's on you, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's so weird. We're getting off topic. But we you know, often when someone doesn't understand you, people will just repeat things the same exact way. But it's really, right. if they're not getting it, it's on you to figure out another way to get that message to them to where it's clear.
Well, whenever you're conversing with anyone, whenever you're passing on any information, you got to realize it's their experience, not yours. You may be giving that information, but if it's not being received in a way that's digestible, then it's worthless. So you as the person who's teaching and the leader in business as well, if you're a leader, it's your team's experience that you've got to deal with. You know, one of the things I do in my corporate action hero speech is I bring a person on stage and in under 5 minutes time, I teach them to crack a bullwhip and take targets out of my hand. And the way that is done is by hacking their fight or flight response, number one. But number two, realizing as a leader, it's not my experience, it's theirs, and I'm guiding them through their fear. There's one point in it where I go, where I'm they've already cracked the whip, and I'm holding a target out there, and I know full well their biggest fear is hitting me.
Yeah.
So I look at them, and I say, look at me. I promise you will not hurt me. I negate their fear immediately. You see, sometimes when you're leading people, you got to lie to them. I'm
kidding. Well, that's the thing. I wasn't so worried about their fight or flight response. I was worried about yours.
You know what? I am fine. I am totally fine. Nothing has ever happened in any of my speeches.
little visual joke there.
for a podcast. Yeah. See, I didn't say I was a good comedian.
John is pretending to miss one of his fingers from a bullwhip accident, I guess. Yeah, I would be worried about that too. I did here's an overcoming of fear. I went to the circus was in town back when that was still a thing, and they offered me some sort of, I don't even think I knew what I was going to do before I went down there, but they said, we'll have you do something, you know, and you can share photos with your listeners and blah, blah, blah. And they threw knives at me, which was, I did draw the line. There was a point when I realized the only place I didn't have knives were up by the sides of my heads, and I thought, you know what? I think we're good now. Right, I don't know. Right. I don't know if they would have done that. They probably knew that. Probably all of us bail at that point. I don't know. But I'm so glad I did it, and it's such a fun experience. It was terrifying, but you know what are they going to do? Murder me, manslaughter me before they open their doors to the like? It's not going to happen. They do this all the time. They're pros. So as long as I don't get jittery, it's going to be good. My wife was so pissed. When she found out that I had done that without telling her, it's like, what am I? I mean, it never even occurred to me. but I mean, I guess it could have gone poorly. Anyway.
Well, yeah, it does sometimes. I tell people all the time, they say, God, you do sword fighting. Have you ever been hurt? And I go, broadsword scar, and I point at my eyes, and my rapier scar, I point at my chin, I nunchuck scar, I point over my eyebrow.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine, I was telling that story one time, and a friend of mine, his name is Kyle Rowling, he was one of the stunt doubles for the Star Wars films. He said, you know, John, you really need to stop parrying with your face. So I was like, okay, I get that. All right, that's good.
Is there a scary moment that you haven't shared already where your techniques have helped you out, helped you move forward?
They have helped me out on so many. I would have to say, of course, the back being paralyzed is the biggest one.
But sure.
There have been times, however, like one of my wives who I divorced, I won't say which one, I came home and my truck was gone, my house was empty, and my wife and child were gone.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was literally a moment of having to really get out of my fear and get into, okay, what do I have to do now? And
right.
And I was able to do it. And right now, right now as we speak, my kid is in the other room playing video games. And, you know, life is good. You know, my ex-wife lives a few miles away and we're fine. But that was the scariest moment other than my back injury.
Well, that's the other thing. If you give into those negative voices, the other side effect of that is depression. Whereas if you are able, and which is a certain amount of is understandable and fine, but at some point you have to start moving forward, even if you're just going through the motions, like we've said, you just got to get started doing whatever it is you're going to do next. And that kind of, usually for me, because I have anxiety, I get depressed, usually activity, being productive, will bring me out of it. I don't have time to think about it anymore. My focus is on the thing that I'm trying to get done.
Well, anytime you're taking motion towards a goal, you're not sitting stagnant. Water, when it's flowing downhill, is full of oxygen and life and its breath. And when you take that same water and you let it sit still, it becomes stagnant and bugs start to lay their eggs in it and becomes nasty and poisonous. You know, you've got to keep motion moving because life is about motion. You know, a lot of people will set big goals for their future and then get to the goal and lose everything because they haven't set a new goal. They haven't set a new direction. You know, for me, I have done so many amazing things in my life and I'm so grateful for every one of them. But I also know that every one of them that I did, I created.
Right.
I'm the one who did those things and I'm the one who made those things happen. And it wasn't hard. It was just a matter of not being fearful and taking action. Once you take those small present moment actions, they will build upon each other. And that giant future success will come surround your present moment experience. You'll be like, okay, here I am. And now you're in that present moment experience. Then you have to go, okay, what goal am I setting now? And what am I going for next?
And should we just jump into, should we just face all our fears? Are there some, we should, well, you know what I mean? Should we, you know, I think there's a movie out right now called Yes Day or something like that, where you just say yes to everything. Should we be saying yes to everything?
Well, I wouldn't be foolhardy about it. You know, you know, I wouldn't say, oh yes, I'm going to set myself on fire unless you learned how to be on fire, you know?
Right.
Because I've had some fire experience myself. But the interesting thing is, you know, unless you've got the Zell gel and all the protective gear, you're not going to set yourself on fire, right? So the goals that you're going to set up to achieve in your life, if you think some of them, if you're afraid of anything, if you're not moving, you're afraid of something. But yeah, I think if you, like, people say, you know, well, I should go jump out of an airplane because I'm afraid of it. That's not overcoming fear. That's adrenaline chasing. At that point, in my opinion,
yeah,
you know, if it's something you truly want to set a goal on and do, I am right behind you. But don't do it just for the sake of seeking the next adrenaline adventure. That's not how I've lived my life. I've just looked at what do I want to do next.
Right.
You know, that's how I'm looking at it. And I've never actually thought of it in the mindset of, can I do the most dangerous thing I can possibly do and survive?
No. Yeah. I just wanted to hear what you would say to that, you know, but which was a good answer. I like that. Yeah, I wouldn't jump out of a plane either. I've gone as far as parasailing, and that's where that's where that ends for me. They say the next step is skydiving, but I'm like, nope, not for this guy.
I did skydiving, and it was an interesting thing. It was a tandem jump. Somebody had my big body strapped to his, which is weird in itself. Okay, I did it. It was okay. My comedy partner of the time, back in the day, he's an adrenaline junkie. And you know, he did his first tandem jump, and then he went on and did thousands of jumps on his own and became certified and everything else. And great, good for him, you know.
Right.
If that's what you want to do, that's awesome. But don't go to the next thing looking for it just because it's adrenaline.
You mentioned that you'd worked with Brad Pitt and David Duchovny, and I'm sure there's many others you haven't mentioned. Can you say anything about either of those experiences?
Well, those two gentlemen were in the same movie. That was in the movie called California. California spelled with a K. Brad Pitt was a serial killer. David Duchovny was a writer. And it was very interesting to watch because from an acting perspective, Brad Pitt he's a method actor. And one of the things that was really interesting was in that movie, he was insane. He was an insane serial killer. And when you saw him on set, there was just something different. Something off about him. And then when it came time for us all to eat lunch, it became an interesting thing because he couldn't be in that social setting like that. And so he went over and he closed off the lunch area and he sat with a couple people alone and ate. and kept everybody else out until he finished because he couldn't be in that space.
Right.
David Duchovny was playing basketball and jumping around. And he was like, yeah, let's have a good old time. It was great. You know, they were great, fun experiences. But it was really interesting watching their two different processes because one of them was so completely immersed in this character and the other one was just like, I'm an actor having a good time. So a very interesting thing. They're both fairly nice men.
I didn't know that about Brad Pitt. I know he's a good actor. I know he's I think people appreciate him now, but back in the day, he was like a pretty face and he was fine as an actor. But I think he's proven he's a lot better than he was given credit for. But I didn't know he was a method actor like that.
Yeah. When you look at the movie that made him famous, which was Thelma and Louise,
right?
He was in that movie to be the pretty boy. But then you look at stuff like Fight Club and you look at stuff like 12 Monkeys and you see this guy, first of all, he's not afraid of not being a pretty boy, too. He's an excellent, excellent guy at delving into characters deep. I'm not a big method fan, but I'm not Brad Pitt either.
You know? Right, right. Sometimes the directors will force it on you, too. I don't know if this was for, I can't remember the movie, and I feel like it must have been Raiders of the Lost Ark, but I'm not sure. But the director, which was Spielberg at the time, during lunch, they wouldn't let the villains, the Nazis, sit with the rest of the crew because they wanted that animosity, I guess.
And it will show on camera too.
Yeah,
it will if your buddy's sitting right over there and they're a Nazi and you're not. It will show on camera. It'll get picked up. And I think it's really smart. And you know, there's so many things that in Hollywood that have come out of legend, like the famous story of the scene where Indiana Jones shoots the guy with the sword. You know the story about that?
Well, I believe it. Well, I'd let you tell it, but I believe it was an ad lib, wasn't it?
He had amoebic dysentery and was very sick. And they were shooting that scene, and there was supposed to be a big sword fight right there. And he said to Spielberg, "Why don't I just shoot him? I got a gun." And Spielberg started giggling and said, "Yeah, let's do that."
Well, to remind people, the guy is really showing off with the sword. I mean, it looks like, oh my God, we're in for a big fight here, a big duel. And then he just like kind of looks annoyed and shoots him. It's fantastic. Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, it's there's so many moments like that, that when you see him on sets happening live, it's pretty cool, you know? And there's also talk about Harrison Ford. There's a story. I don't know if it's true or not. I've heard it from a lot of stuntmen and a lot of people who work in film. When Harrison was on Raiders of the Lost Ark, guy knocked on his trailer and said, "Hey, Harrison, tomorrow I'm going to teach you how to crack a whip." And he said, "Okay." So the next morning, Harrison Ford showed up on set wearing a biker jacket, welding gloves, and a motorcycle helmet. Because he didn't want to get hit by the whip.
Right, right, right.
And so... And it's interesting because if you've ever cracked a whip, you know it's really hard to crack a whip when you have all that stuff on because you have all those barriers blocking you. Right?
Okay.
But he showed up on set and they slowly had to get him comfortable with cracking it and then slowly start peeling the things off of him to get it so he could crack it.
Well, yeah, because it's a long whip, as I remember. So it could, when you pull it back, you could get yourself. I have a question here that you've been asked before, but I feel like we're talking about movies now. And you call yourself the corporate action hero, and superhero movies are all the rage these days. So what is the difference between an action hero and a superhero?
Great question. I'm glad I gave it to you.
Exactly.
It's a very, very distinct difference. Action heroes are ordinary individuals who create extraordinary results in service of others. You know, anybody can be an action hero. The word action means to create motion, start momentum, or to do something. And the word hero is someone who achieves an extraordinary result in service of others. Superheroes are people who wear their underwear on the outside of their pants, have been irradiated by some sort of goo, and have superpowers, and probably don't achieve much in their life. If you really think about it, if a superhero does something super, they're actually just a slacker because they're not going out of their box. They're not doing anything extraordinary.
Sure. And they only do super things when there's some horrible disaster. Why aren't you out there like fixing the infrastructure or something?
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah. And every superhero movie has the school bus of kids going over the bridge, right?
Right.
And
right.
And the superhero comes and the first thing he does is yank the door off the back of the bus to get the kids out or something like that. That's got to really tick off the bus driver if you think about it. You know, that guy's got to be like, "That's my bus. What are you doing?" And then the bus falls off the bridge and hits the water and explodes like it was an H-bomb, which I don't understand that either. So it's a whole different
every thing. Vehicle explodes in action / superhero movies. So.
Crazy. Yeah. I just don't get it.
I don't think this has been done, but they should have a movie where they walk away from the car, and they're like bracing for the explosion, and then there's like a pregnant pause, and nothing ever happens.
That would right, they should
be something.
Did you ever see the movie Galaxy Quest?
I did. It's been a long time. I need to rewatch it.
One of the best parts about that movie was their commentary on the Star Trek trope.
Right.
You know, they would say, well, this is supposed to happen here because I'm the guy in the red shirt. You know?
Yeah.
You know. So I love that kind of stuff. I would love to see more of that kind of film.
It's meta. Right. It's meta. John
totally
Davis.
Cool, though. Really meta. There you go.
Closing thoughts. Is there anything else you want to say about fear? Well, before you do, for a free gift from John, you can go to his website, corporateactionhero.com/free-gift-page. .html, but I'll make it easy for you and put the link in the episode description.
And I only offer that to my either paying clients or to podcasts.
Thank you for that, for sure. Yeah, it's the Corporate Action Hero 5F workbook. And yeah, workbooks are a big thing, I've noticed. It's like people will pay good money to get a workbook. So here you've listened to us chat and you're like, I'd like to learn more. You know, I have things I'm afraid of. I'd like to get over my fears. Here's a workbook for free. Click that link in the episode description.
Can I specify what free means? Because
sure.
I said free. That means you're going to go to that link and you're going to come to a page where you can download the book. You do not have to give me an email address. I'm not going to track anything you do because my word is good. I said free. That means
right.
free.
I love that. Even if you had just clarified that it did require an email address, I would still be proud of you. Like, that's just full disclosure, you know, transparent honesty, but you don't even have to do that. That's fantastic. Any closing thoughts, anything we didn't get to that you want to talk about in regards to fear?
In regards to fear, just realize that any fear you have is not rooted in your present moment. It's a future event that does not exist in this moment. So keep your present moment positive, stay positively focused on an outcome, and your fear will abate itself.
Love it. John Davis, thank you so much. Appreciate
you.
Your time. And you know, the workbook for listeners is fantastic. Nice added value there. I hope you found that interesting. I hope you found some good actionable steps there. I love the idea. I love what he said about movement, which is true. If you're hoping for something to happen, but you never take action, I mean, you already know what that result is going to be. So even baby steps are better than just staying static. Everything adds up. And before you know it, you may be living in a new reality. In a good way, not like a 2020 way. I mentioned at the top of the podcast that I did some open mic comedy. Faced my fears, did that again. And it sucked. I bombed. I wasn't really ready for it. I took some advice from the folks running a clubhouse, some professional comedians. And it wasn't bad advice. It's just that I didn't give myself enough time to prepare. And their advice was, you know, don't memorize everything verbatim, which, you know, Jerry Seinfeld, that's what he does. He crafts everything into the perfect sentence, and then that's the sentence he performs. But I took the advice that it will sound more natural if I just do my best jokes, ones that I know by heart, so I don't have to memorize them. I already know them. And I just create a set list, take that on stage if I need it, and then you've got your jokes, and then whatever else happens up there. Live, spontaneous. Well, I remembered the bulk of the material. I don't think I showed anybody that I forgot anything on stage, so I had that going for me. But I was nervous, and that's the problem. I wasn't confident in the process. And so some jokes got laughs, but not as big a laugh as you would hope. And maybe there were some jokes that just didn't work. But I think overall, the problem was I was nervous as hell up there. And people can feel that. And then you make them nervous, you know? And confidence goes a long way. Confidence could really sell a joke. It could be a really cheesy joke, but if you sell it right with confidence, it might kill. So though I bombed, I got something out of it. I figured out that, yeah, I could go up there without memorizing word for word a routine and just know the set list. And I can do that. I'd like to do it better next time, but I can do that. And the other thing is, I got on that stage again. I faced my fears. And your worst fear doing stand-up is that you're going to bomb. And I bombed. And I live to tell about it. And I'm going to do more open mics. So there you go. If that helps you in any way with whatever you're struggling with, something you want to do but you're afraid to, just go do it. And to quote, I don't know, some motivational speaker I saw recently, I hope you do fail. I hope you fail so that you can learn from it and do better. But to be afraid of failing and not do anything because of that, that's the real failure.
Does that make any sense at all? Oh, and I owe you an apology, too, for this episode being delivered quite late. Quite a delay between episodes. And without getting too into it, you know, I'm still on that job hunt and widening my net and all that. And so there's just, you know, my time occupied with that search and, you know, writing new cover letters and rewriting resumes. You know, you kind of got to customize everything for the job you're going for. So it just is what it is. But I'm committed to doing the podcast. It's not going to go anywhere once I have my next job. But for now, it may occasionally throw a wrench into the works. I hope not, though. All right, change of pace next week. We'll learn all about the benefits of tutoring and the effect the pandemic has had on students.
If anything, not only did the pandemic shine a light on academics, but it was shining a light on the inequities we have at the base.
That's my guest, Worldwise Tutoring founder Lindsay Wander, next episode on The Daily Detour.
You've been listening to The Daily Detour, a production of Basic Bits LLC, hosted by Dan Roberts, music by Quickie. And I'm your announcer, Libet Wolf. New episodes drop Monday through Friday. Subscribe now so you never miss a moment. And we'll chat with you next time.
Hi!